intuition.
Curiosity.
The next idea.
There is no straight path from your seat today to where you are going. Don't try to draw that line. You will not just get it wrong, you will miss big opportunities.
It's fair to say the automobile has been central to the life of Bob Lutz. He's 85 now, but before he was semi-retired, he held top-tier positions at BMW, Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, where he was vice chairman. He recently wrote a piece for Automotive News with a striking headline, "Kiss the Good Times Goodbye." It's about where the world of cars is headed, in his view, for better or for worse. Here in Michigan, the auto industry is both our historic legacy and an area of substantial innovation. So we thought, who better to have as our guest on The Next Idea? Joining us now to talk about the future or demise as cars as we know them is Bob Lutz. Pleasure to welcome you, Bob.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks.
You begin your article with a sentence that really is striking. Here's what you write. "It saddens me to say it, but we are approaching the end of the automotive era." That's a pretty major assertion. Why do you make that assertion?
Well, because the automobile has been with us for about 120 years, and it supplanted the previous prime mover, which was the horse. And we're now getting to the point where the automobile can't fulfill its primary purpose anymore, which is to move people from place to place on the surface of the earth easily and efficiently. It's not doing that anymore because we have so much traffic congestion that enormous amounts of time is being lost in all the major cities and urban agglomerations of the world in traffic, which is a great loss in national productivity. So the car is no longer able to fulfill its purpose. And then when you consider that the vast majority of cars are occupying space, like in the downtown area, in parking garages, underground garages, parking lots, and they're not being driven, which adds to congestion, but it doesn't add to a transportation solution. It's perfectly obvious that something has to give, and what has to give is the use of privately owned cars initially, for the first decade or two in large urban zones. And the automobile as we know it may continue to exist for a while out in the country and, the vast hinterlands of Australia and the United States. But in high traffic areas, it's going to be replaced by autonomous modules, which you don't own, which you call up, they take you where you want to go, you drop it off, swipe your credit card, get billed, and the module goes off and serves somebody else. So all of the modules are in use 100% of the time. None of them are just sitting around taking up space.
How long do you think, Bob, it'll take before we're at that point, getting around in a fully autonomous module? What do you think will be the tipping point?
I think in the urban areas, it's probably 10 to 15 years away. And it'll be gradual. For a while, autonomous vehicles will coexist with human-driven cars. But that's not going to work real well. And there'll be a lot of accidents. I mean, no more than today. But the accidents that do occur will be caused by human-driven cars and not by autonomous cars. And at that point, governments around the world will say something to car owners like, look, by 20 so-and-so, we're not going to permit any privately owned vehicles in the inner city anymore. So you have 5 years to get rid of your car and start using an autonomous module. And getting rid of the car means either scrapping it or selling it to somebody who lives in an area way, way, way outside of town. Or if it's a valuable car, putting it in one of the automotive country clubs with racetracks where you can use it on weekends in a non-public highway situation.
Bob, we're a people that likes our personal liberties. Do you think people will sit still for being told, get rid of your individual vehicle?
Well, I mean, the government also requires driver's licenses. They require insurance. The government also says you can't drive on sidewalks or through parks. So, I mean, everybody accepts a certain role of government. And the freedom that we lose from being able to get into our car and go anywhere is only freedom up to a point, because the minute you get into a traffic jam, you ask yourself, why am I doing this? And traffic jams and stuff are going to be a thing of the past. So everybody's going to gain enormous amounts of time. Autonomous vehicles that are completely safe are a boon for the elderly, for the handicapped. If you want to send your kids someplace, you put them in an autonomous module and off they go. So in a way, it restricts some of the freedoms we've had up to now. But on the other hand, it opens up incredible new possibilities. And mainly, it's going to give everybody time back.
In your piece for Automotive News, Bob Lutz, you write about a blending that these modules of the future will be a blending of rail type with individual transportation. So basically, our transportation becoming more train-like.
Wherever you have a bunch of modules, they will group together to form almost like a train with minimum nose-to-tail separation so that if you get to a controlled intersection, and by the way, these autonomous modules don't need red lights because they can detect a signal without a visible light. But when they stop to let the cross traffic through and then the signal changes to where your direction is free to go again, today the person in front of somebody goes. 3 seconds later, the next person says, oh, the car in front of me is gone, puts down his phone and gets going. And the next person requires 3 seconds and so forth. By the time you got to the 10th person, the signal has changed again. Well, with autonomous vehicles, it's not going to be like that. They're going to be linked together like in a pod, not physically linked, but electronically linked. So when the go signal comes, all of those pods are going to be accelerating at the same rate, maintaining the same nose-to-tail distance, and that whole string of autonomous vehicles will be through that intersection in about one quarter of the time that it takes human-driven vehicles because of human reaction times.
We're talking with automotive titan Bob Lutz as we explore his piece for Automotive News, Kiss the Good Times Goodbye. You know, Bob, when we talk about autonomous vehicles on this program, which is often, I will hear from people who email and go, not me, I wouldn't trust a self-driving car, I don't want one, they're being forced on us. MIT earlier this year found nearly half of people they surveyed say they would not buy an autonomous vehicle. How do you address that level of suspicion and mistrust?
Well, why, nobody's going to buy a vehicle anyway, so why worry?
Okay.
And people take autonomous vehicles all the time. You go to Detroit Airport and get on the Delta tram. That thing is moving at about 45 miles an hour in a narrow alley, and it never occurs to anybody that the thing doesn't have a driver. And yet it gets to the other end, it slows down, it opens its doors, probably transports tens of thousands of people a day, and it's fully autonomous. We used to have elevator operators. There was a kindly gentleman in uniform who stood in the elevator and had a handle in his right hand, and he'd wait till everybody was on board, then he'd close two doors, and then he'd move the handle up or down. And people said the same thing. Oh, I'm not going to get in an elevator where I just push a button and I don't know whether it's going to stop or not. So people get used to these things, and there is always resistance to change. People always say, oh, I'm not going to buy that. And then, of course, when they have no choice, they wind up using it like everybody else. So, but is this a huge change? Yes. Is it hard for people to get used to? Yes. We had the same thing when we still had horses. Hmm. People said, I'm not going to give up my horse. I'm not going to give up my carriage. With the horse, I know what I've got. Whereas with these horseless carriages, they break down. You've got to put liquid in them, et cetera, et cetera. So that doesn't trouble me at all. People complain a lot before the change comes, and when the change is forced on them, they're totally okay with it.
Bob, I'm wondering, is it hard for you, a man whose career has been so entwined with the personal car, the personal vehicle as we know it, is it hard for you to anticipate this change, or are you ready for it?
Well, I'm ready for it because by the time it comes, I'll be 100, and I'll be a good candidate for autonomous modules anyway. Just put me in it and enter the destination. It opens up whole new worlds. So many of my friends that are, you know, near my age say they don't want to drive at night anymore. Well, with autonomous modules, not a problem. So, yeah, do I regret the demise of the privately owned automobile where brands matter and, you know, mine's got more horsepower and mine looks better and mine comes from Germany and so forth and all these non-transportation reasons that make cars fun to own and talk about? Yeah, it's sad. It's sad that it's going away. It'll be replaced by something else. Humanity won't suffer.
Bob, if this prediction of yours is true, what does it mean for Michigan? What would we have to do in Michigan to keep from having another decline of the Rust Belt moment in our future?
Well, first of all, even the most diehard critics of my article, most of the argument is simply with the timetable. Nobody doubts that it's coming true. I mean, nobody. Everybody in the automotive industry, supplier industry, government, insurance companies, everybody knows that this is coming for sure. But what does it mean for Michigan? It's not necessarily bad. I think the news is the worst for companies that make money on prestige brands like BMW, Mercedes, Audi, Porsche, Ferrari. These are brands which don't fulfill the transportation function any better than a three-year-old used Chevrolet Malibu. I mean, people dial up an Uber car, it arrives and they say, well, I'm not riding in a Camry or I'm not riding in a Maxima. I want an Uber where the guy owns an old BMW. I mean, that just doesn't happen. So the companies that rely on the prestige and the label are going to be in serious trouble when the modules become unbranded commodities, because these modules are going to be owned by the big transportation companies like Uber and Lyft and Maven and so forth. There'll probably be dozens of others. And they'll place orders for 50 or 60,000 modules at a time, which won't be branded Chevrolet or Ford. They'll be branded for the transportation company. So that does not necessarily spell death for Detroit as a manufacturing or engineering source, because these modules are going to evolve over time. The transportation companies are going to be more and more demanding in terms of what these modules can do, what the range is, what the cost is, and so forth. So it's going to require constant innovation, not to sell them one at a time to individual consumers, but to be able to win the bids when the big transportation companies place orders for 50,000 of these, 25,000 long ones, 30,000 extra long ones, and so forth. And as long as the Detroit companies remain competitive, and by the way, as long as the state government and the federal government continue to furnish a climate which makes it possible for manufacturing to thrive, and I frankly think the current administration is very much focused on that, I see no reason why the Detroit companies can't continue to exist. The only thing is they will no longer exist as Lincoln, Cadillac, Ford, Chevrolet, et cetera, et cetera. They will exist as American Module Manufacturing Corporation. Just like there are companies out there today, there's a company called American Freight Car Corporation. They build railroad cars for the railroads. And, you know, the average person's never heard of them, but they very efficiently build railroad cars. And that's kind of the way Detroit will be now. The supplier network, I think, has an excellent chance of surviving and doing really well as long as they maintain innovation and can produce competitively, which makes things really no different from today.
I was going to say, that's the way things are and have been. So you're saying keep on keeping on in that area.
Yeah, keep on keeping on, and it in some ways gets tougher because there won't be an added money to be gained from selling a GMC versus a Chevrolet. But the good news is all of the prestige brands that are taking a lot of business away from the mass producers, they're going to be in even worse trouble because they're going to have trouble producing modules competitively at the same low cost that, say, General Motors or Ford can do.
Bob Lutz, it was a pleasure to speak with you. We want to thank you so much for spending time with us.
Okay, you're quite welcome.
Support for the Next Idea on Stateside comes from Michigan Economic Development Corporation, committed to marketing Michigan to drive job growth and investment in our communities. MichiganBusiness.org.